welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, and in this hour, crime stories, later on a broadcast of The Whistler from 1948, but right now, a true tale of crime from The Big Story. Submissions were taken by newspaper reporters around the country to appear on this program and have their story dramatized, and also honoring them was a cash award by the Pall Mall Company. We hear a story now, first penned by Rolf K. Mills of the Minneapolis Morning Tribune, and was broadcast on NBC on May 19, 1948.
The Big Story.
Headquarters.
Police?
Yeah.
This is Walt Kramer, the grain inspector.
Yeah.
I was just shortcutting back from Cedar Lake across the city dump.
Yeah, so?
Well, I just saw a pair of silk stockings sticking up out of the dump.
Yeah?
Yeah. The thing is, there was legs in them. A woman's legs.
The Big Story. Here is America. Its sound and its fury, its joy and its sorrow, as faithfully reported by the men and women of the great American newspapers. Minneapolis, Minnesota. From the pages of the Minneapolis Morning Tribune, the headline story of a murder victim who was buried alive. Tonight, to Rolf K. Mills of the Minneapolis Morning Tribune, goes the Pall Mall Award for The Big Story. The story as it actually happened. Rolf K. Mills' story as he lived it. Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Your name? Rolf K. Mills. Your paper? The Minneapolis Morning Tribune. Your beat? Well, that's your particular squawk this particular night of April 29th. Because you're supposed to be working out of the city room, and instead, you're on substitute duty down at police headquarters. You thought you'd graduated from there long ago. But no, here you are back in the cops and robbers department. As for your big story, well, you don't know it, but there's one cooking. It starts way back, back before you even joined the paper, like this.
How many times do I have to tell you not to slam that door when you come in?
I'm sorry.
Sorry, that's all you ever say, and then you go right ahead and do it all over again.
I said I was sorry. It wasn't my fault. The spring's busted.
Well, why don't you fix it?
I will.
Promises.
Oh, lay off of me, will you, honey?
Don't you honey me.
I was on
it. Oh, you make me sick. Come on, let's go out and get something to eat.
Go out? I just came in. Oh, golly, I thought...
Now what? Now what have I done?
Well, we're always going out to eat. Can't we ever stay home once in a while?
Stay home? When do we ever go out? When do you ever take me out?
Oh, that's not fair. Well, last week
Never mind. Forget it. I'll go out in the kitchen and make your old supper.
Look, let's not keep squabbling, huh?
No.
Golly, everything used to be so nice. Everything used to
Never mind. Just go inside, take your shoes off, dear. Read your paper, dear. Yeah, when everything's ready, you'll be fast asleep. I know.
Look, it isn't as if you had other things to do all day. Is it asking too much for a guy to want dinner when he comes home? Is that asking too much? Just a little peace and quiet around the place? Do you have to pick fights with me all the time? Oh, honey.
Hand me the can opener.
Listen to me, will
you? What do you want, beans with pork or without?
Listen to
with
me.
With or without, what do you want?
Just a little peace and quiet around the house.
Go ahead, get sore.
Who's sore? I'm just trying to make some sense here.
Oh, I know that tone of voice. I can tell. You get so noble, so high and mighty. You make me sick. You make me just plain sick.
Got an aspirin tablet yourself.
Very clever.
You know, someday I'm really going to get sore.
That's right. Threaten me.
Good and sore someday. One of us is going to be very sorry.
Are you trying to scare me?
No. I'm just telling you.
You keep this up. You keep nagging the daylights out of me. You keep yapping at me. Yap, yap, yappity, yap, yap, yap.
You keep it up, and so help me, I'll...
You're what? You're what? You have to slam that door all the time!
Honey, you home? Honey? Hey! That
woman.
Bartender, my wife's been in here tonight?
Yeah, here and gone, friend. Here and gone.
Ah, nuts. For the last time, you're coming home with me?
For the last time, no!
Okay. Don't bother coming home. Ever.
Nothing of that. And you know. You, Ralph K. Mills, police reporter for the Minneapolis Morning Tribune, do not have a backward-looking crystal ball. All you know is that it's a pretty average Friday night down at police headquarters. And average means dull. The desk sergeant's got a call. Probably the same old routine. Nothing.
Headquarters. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so? Yeah?
Nothing, huh? Not the way you rushed into the other room. And out comes your friend, Detective Peterson, with this.
You say you had a date tonight, Ralph?
Yeah, and a deadline. Why?
You got another date now, you and me.
Where?
Down at the city dump.
Very funny. With who?
A corpse. In silk stockings. You coming? Hold the shoveling. That does it.
Mm. What a beating she took.
Yeah.
Any idea who she is, Peterson?
No identifying marks, labels, torn off the clothes.
Uh-huh. Safe and calling it murder?
Sure.
Say, doctor.
Yes?
Can you add anything? Can you give me anything more on the cause of death beyond the beating, that is?
Yes.
What's that, sir?
This woman has dirt in her mouth. And in her throat. Yes. Proving.
Uh-huh.
Proving she was alive when she was put here.
Buried alive. Where's the nearest phone? I've got to call the paper.
I'll have to hold you for the fast mail edition, George.
Guess so, Ralph. You'll stick with it, huh?
Oh, sure. But don't set your heart on identification by the next deadline or a solution for the final edition, complete with killer attached.
Could be done.
Sure, by Sherlock Holmes, the FBI, to... Hey, the man is serious. Look, George, this one will go down in the books marked unsolved. Believe me.
Never can tell. Just you stay with it. After all, you've got a whole hour till the next deadline.
An hour? Might as well be a week. Remember, George, what I've got is a press card, not a crystal ball. Sarge, I've gone through all the files. What have I found? Nothing.
Did you try the rogues gallery, Mills?
Back to the year one. No soap. Petty crimes, no soap.
How about missing persons?
Nothing there either. Oh, except this.
Huh?
You think this picture looks like the dead one?
Nope.
Neither did I much. Oh, what do they want from a guy? Miracles? They sit in an office downtown and... Hey, what time is it?
1:45.
Oh, 15 minutes till the page closes. What have I got? Twice what I phoned in. Twice nothing... Hey, who's the woman just came in with Peterson?
I don't know.
I think I'll see what goes on.
Right this way, lady. Won't take long.
What's the story, Peterson?
It looks like identification, Ralph. She saw your story in the paper and told the cop on the beat she thought you knew the woman.
Who is she?
Neighbor. Now, Mrs. Stiles, what was that woman's name again?
Mrs. Cressley. Mrs. Sadie Cressley.
What makes you think the murdered woman is your neighbor, ma'am?
Oh, I don't know. I just have a feeling. She hasn't been home for days. Neither has her husband. They had a fight. They were always fighting.
I see.
Right here, Miss Stiles. This door.
Oh.
A A word from you is all we need. Are you all right?
Yes. Yes.
Well, this way, please. Ready, ma'am?
Yes.
Is that your neighbor, Mrs. Cressley?
Well, I...
Take your time. Be sure.
It
yes?
Looks, but... Oh, her face, it... She's so... No, I mean, yes. Please.
Mrs. Stiles.
Yes. Yes, that's her.
Sure, sir.
Peterson from police headquarters. Does a Mr. Cressley live here?
Yes.
Is he home?
Not right now.
Expect him back?
Why, yes. Would you like to come in and wait?
Yes. Who are you?
Me?
Yes.
Why, I'm Mrs. Cressley, his wife.
We'll be back in just a few. Now, we return you to our narrator, Bob Sloan, and the big story of Ralph K. Mills, as he lived it and wrote it.
A fine thing. Covering police headquarters for the Minneapolis Morning Tribune, you, Ralph K. Mills, have a blonde corpse turn up in time for the first edition. A person unknown, murdered by person or persons unknown. And the city desk hopes for the who and the by whom for the final edition. And you've just followed a false trail to the bitter end. Just another case of mistaken identity. So what do? Step one, you call the desk.
A mistake, George. The woman who identified the corpse was wrong. I'm sorry.
It wasn't your fault, Ralph.
Any ideas?
Didn't you say before you thought you'd found a picture of a missing woman who...
Yeah, but the desk cop and I agreed it wasn't the dead one.
Well, just the same, the woman was wrong just now. Couldn't you be? What was the date she disappeared?
1935. The name was Ruth M. Corneau.
Well, she could have changed in all those years. So backtrack. Everybody makes mistakes.
Yeah, I know. That's why they put erasers on lead pencils. And tonight, my pencil is all eraser. Stone, Collins, Compton, Copley, Corneau. Ruth M. Corneau, reported missing by husband. Mm-hmm.
Talking to yourself, Rolf?
I don't know. Look, Sarge, this Corneau woman we tossed out of the running before, anything else on her, charges, complaints?
Corneau? Let's see. There, here it is. Corneau. Oh, no, this is a man. Peter Corneau.
Go on.
Arrested on complaint of his wife, Ruth M.
That's the one? For what? What for?
You're going to love this, Ralph. Assault.
Hello?
Joe Lopez?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Lopez, this is Ralph Mills down at headquarters.
What's with headquarters? I'm in trouble?
No, sir. I'm from the Morning Tribune. I'm checking on somebody who used to live in your boarding house.
Huh?
Can I ask you three questions?
I don't know.
Just three simple yes or no questions, okay?
Okay. Three.
Okay. Do you remember a couple named Corneau, Peter and Ruth?
Yes. That's one.
Good. Do you know where they are now?
Him? No. Her, she ran away from him. Kicks around restaurants, clubs, you know.
That's two. Three. Would you know her if you saw her?
I guess so. They owe me back rent.
Well, would you come down to headquarters?
You say three questions. No.
This is Detective Peterson, Lopez. Will you come downtown to identify a body?
Yes.
All right, Mr. Lopez. Take your time, Mr. Lopez, be sure. Well?
It don't look like I'm gonna get my back rent. I guess.
For the identification, you say goodbye to Detective Peterson until later. You'll make the 11:30 edition by our replayed and our whisker. The murdered woman is Ruth M. Corneau, and it's definitely established that she is separated from her husband under conditions of mutual dislike, to put it mildly. And so, you have the victim, the motive, and the problem of finding suspect number one, the husband. Then on your own, you start checking all over town. But while you walk the jukebox and Neon Trail, the husband is being questioned down in Florida.
Private First Class Peter Corneau reporting to Captain Carroll as directed.
That is Corneau. Yeah. You're a Minneapolis boy, Private?
Yes, sir.
Ever in trouble with the police?
Nothing serious, sir.
I'm instructed by Detective Peterson of the Minneapolis Police to tell you that anything you tell me may be held against you. He just called me.
I see, sir.
You married, Corneau?
Separated, sir. Sir,
later. Where were you last night?
On pass, sir. I reported to duty at Reveille today.
Where'd you go?
Fishing, sir.
Can you prove it?
The men I was with can, sir.
You didn't leave the state of Florida?
On an overnight pass, sir.
All right. You say you're separated from your wife?
Yes, sir.
Prepare yourself for a shock. Last night, she was murdered.
I see. I figured somebody...
What's that, ma'am?
I said I knew somebody would someday.
You want another pass?
Excuse me, sir?
I said, do you want me to write you a 3-day pass for her funeral?
No. No thanks, sir.
Suspect eliminated. And there you are looking for him in the local bars. But at one, you learn about this tasteful little incident from a bar girl.
He used to pal around Ruthie and me. But she was... Well, she was kind of hard, you know. Everybody was just another sucker for her. Oh, I mean, well, money, you know. So one night, we was here, her and I. All of a sudden, she leaves me flat and goes outside. Goes tearing through the door. And I follow her just in time to see her crash into
somebody. Hey! Why don't you walk where you're looking?
Oh, I'm sorry, lady.
You're sorry? Look at my stockings. You ruined my stockings. Sorry, that's all I ever hear is sorry. You knocked the lips off my shoes.
I said I was sorry. As for the shoes, I'll drive you home, okay?
And what, a bus? Hit the road.
Okay, have it your way.
Stupid square. Watch where you get. Hey, wait a minute. Is this your car? Or did you just drive it for somebody?
Hey, it's my car. I drive it for myself.
Well, why didn't you say so? Home, James.
The name is Carson. Wally Carson. And talk nice, Blondie. Hey, you're not bad looking at all. Where'd you say you wanted to go?
You're not bad looking either for a guy who picks girls up by knocking them down.
I said talk nice, baby. Where to, sis? You still want to ride? Home?
No. I want to ride. Let's go someplace and have some fun. Huh?
While the bar girl's telling this, you check your watch. A half hour to final deadline. You're coming closer. Very close. All you need now is...
What'd you say the name of that pickup guy was?
Wally Carson. She went with him steady after that.
Thanks. Thanks a lot. I'm going to try another bar, but here, buy yourself a drink with something in it to drink for a change.
Well,
like I said, everything's going nice and quiet when this blonde...
Cornell?
Yeah. Uh-huh. She comes in and takes over the end of the bar. Now, I'd seen her husband come and drag her out, and I seen him tell her not to come home, and I don't want that kind of trade. This is a home type bar.
I know.
You what? Oh. She's feeling fine, no pain at all, drinking up some guy's dough, I figure, and... I'm wondering how I can get rid of her quiet when all of a sudden somebody does it for me. A door opens and in walks this guy, Carson.
Ruthie.
Somebody call me? Oh, it's you.
Yeah, it's me, all right. Where you been the last 2 days?
Who wants to know?
I want to know.
You want to know? Do you own me or something? Stop pushing me around.
Who push who around? You make up to me? You take me for everything I got? And you call that me pushing you around? Come on, you're getting out of here.
Ah, your meter's running.
Come on.
I like it here.
I said get out now. Come on.
You cheap square, you mate. Go on, hit the road. You get out of here. You let me go. Take your hands off me. Who do you think you're pushing around? Let go of me. How do you think you are pushing me around?
That's it. Me, it's none of my business. I would have paid him to take her away, anybody. And that's all.
Huh? When'd you say this was?
Well, didn't I tell you? Only last night it was. Just last night.
That is it. Motive and man. Wally Carson, last man to see Ruth Corno alive. A check on the city directory gives you his address. A call to Peterson, and you have a good cop with you. One short ride, and you have 10 minutes to go to the final deadline with your story on the other side of this door. Peterson unbuttons the flap on his holster. You shift a little behind him. You never can tell.
Nobody home, you think?
I don't know. Here, take the gun. Cover me. Stand back. I'll force the door.
Blood on the walls.
Carson! Watch at the other room. Carson, come out, will you?
Pete, look. There's a note in the couch.
Uh-oh. Don't touch it.
Okay to read it?
Go ahead.
Dear Mother. I'm sorry. We had a terrific fight. I loved her and I couldn't stand to lose her. But I couldn't hold her. I guess nobody could. Money in watch pocket for rent. I'm going away. Hope we meet soon. Flown the coop. Can I use the phone?
You're sure, and you can read them the note, too.
Thanks. You know, there's something about this note. Money in watch pocket. Money in watch pocket. Hey, he expects to be found. What's that door lead to? Closet. What's this one?
It leads to the garage. Come on, the front way. On the inside.
Wait a minute. Listen.
Engine's running.
He gets down on his knees. So do you. You sniff at the bottom of the door. You both say one word. No. Two.
Carbon monoxide.
In just a moment, we'll read you a telegram from Ralph K. Mills of the Minneapolis Morning Tribune with the final outcome of tonight's big story.
On entering garage, we found that killer in tonight's big story had escaped beyond the law by committing suicide. Solution of case came at 3 a.m., 9 hours after start of investigation, and in time for the final edition. Many thanks for tonight's Pall Mall Award.
Thank you, Mr. Mills. The makers of Pall Mall are proud to have named you the winner of the Pall Mall $500 Award for notable service in the field of journalism.
Listen again next week, same time, same station,
when Pall Mall's will present another big story. A big story from the front pages of the Mobile, Alabama Press Register. By Lyon, George Cox. A big story about a murder, an escape, and a manhunt. The Big Story is produced by Bernard J. Proctor with music by Vladimir Zelensky. Tonight's program was written by Alan Sloan. Your narrator was Bob Sloan, and Art Carney played the part of Ralph K. Mills. In order to protect the names of people actually involved in tonight's authentic Big Story, the names of all characters in the dramatization were changed, with the exception of the reporter, Mr. Mills.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
The Big Story, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 19th of May, 1948, an NBC episode. You are listening to an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now, on to a broadcast of The Whistler, heard on February 18th, 1948, on the CBS West Coast Network, called Quiet Suicide.
The Signal Oil Program... The Whistler. That whistle is your signal for the Signal Oil Program, The Whistler.
I am the Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
Yes, friends, it's time for the Signal Oil Program, The Whistler, rated tops in popularity for a longer period of time than any other West Coast program in radio history. And now the Whistler's strange story, Quiet Suicide.
It was in a drab room in a commercial hotel in Chicago that Frank Reynolds finally made up his mind. And in a curious way, it was quite appropriate that the decision should come to him there, partway between Los Angeles and New York, partway between two lives. He'd known from the first, of course, that a showdown was inevitable sooner or later. But as time went on, he began to recognize the desperate form the showdown would take. He came to realize that the only way out was murder. The train tickets were in his pocket. His bags were packed, ready to go when he picked up the phone.
Operator.
This is Mr. Reynolds in room 617. I'd like to call New York. Mrs. Frank Reynolds. Long Island, 89038.
Thank you, sir. One moment, please.
Right.
Long distance. I'm calling Long Island, New York.
Is this Mr. Frank Reynolds?
Yes, that's right.
I have a call for you from Los Angeles, Mr. Reynolds.
Los Angeles? Look, I'm calling New York.
Go ahead, Los
Just
Angeles.
A moment, operator.
Frank.
Millicent, how did you...
Darling, I had to call you. I knew you'd be staying there.
I'm sorry, Millie. I can't talk now. My train leaves in
Frank,
a few minutes.
Frank, you've got to tell me the truth. I can't stand it any longer.
What's the matter, dear?
You're running off that way, not even saying goodbye.
Oh, darling, I told you I had to rush off about that business deal in New York.
But it's more than that. Isn't it, darling?
What do you mean, Millie?
Tell me, Frank, you've got to be fair with me. If it's another woman,
Another woman?
It's on my mind all the time. I can't eat. I can't sleep.
Listen, Millicent, I told you 100 times. There's no other woman, dear. No one but you. Please believe that.
Shall I put them on?
No. Can't you tell I'm still on this call? Get off the line. Millie.
Yes.
Millie, believe me for once, will you? You're imagining things. I love you, baby. There's no one else. I'll just be a good girl till I get back.
All right, Frank. I'm sorry. But you can't blame me. After all, I am your wife.
Yeah, sure. Goodbye, Angel.
Operator?
You can go ahead with New York now.
Oh, yes, sir. I'm sorry about the interruption, sir. I knew you wanted to talk to your wife in New York, but when I found out your wife was still in Los Angeles...
Never mind that. Have you got my New York number?
Yes, sir. I'll connect you. Hello? Hello?
Diane.
Frank.
Diane, listen, honey. I haven't much time. You're expecting me day after tomorrow off the train at Penn Station?
You mean you aren't coming?
Oh, sure, sure. But listen, I'll be in New York tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm flying the rest of the way. Be in early. It'll give us at least a day together, alone. You can meet me at LaGuardia, Flight 8, American Airlines.
But Frank, you do such strange things. What'll I tell Uncle George and the family?
Well, don't tell him anything. That's the idea. Explain to your Uncle George that you're going into town early to shop for a day or two. Oh, we'll skip the whole Long Island tribe and just be together for a day. Sound good?
I think so.
You think so?
It's wonderful, Frank. Yes, you're so clever, darling. I'm a lucky girl to have such a smart husband.
Yes, Frank, the operator has reason to be confused. Because there are two Mrs. Reynolds. One in New York, one in Los Angeles. And you're trembling as you hang up the receiver in Chicago. It becomes even more clear to you now, with the two lives you've been so careful to keep apart, almost meeting accidentally by telephone, how ruinous it would be if Diane and Millicent should ever get together. And the only way out is the desperate way, isn't it? It's too bad, too. Diane is so young, so pretty, so very trusting. At least, she always seemed to believe you. But at the airport, you wonder from the moment she meets you if something's wrong.
American Airlines Flight 8, arriving at Gate 3.
Over here, Frank.
American Airlines.
Diane! Hello! Oh, excited to see me?
Yes, Frank, I'm excited.
Did you drive out?
No, the town car's been...
Well, how about a taxi?
It's right over here.
Oh.
Where to, folks?
Harding Arms apartment. It's on the east side on 52nd.
Harding Arms?
I found it last night after you called.
Oh.
I think you'll like it, Frank.
Anyone know I'm here?
Not a soul. Uncle George thinks I'm shopping. He's meeting me in the morning at Penn Station to be there when your train comes in.
Oh, that's perfect.
And you've really arranged to be on it?
Why not? Just set an early alarm. I'll run out to Newark and get back aboard the train coming from Chicago.
You've planned it all pretty carefully, haven't you, darling?
Of course. I wanted to have you all to myself for a change.
So? You went to all this trouble. Tickets, the telephone calls, everything. Just to be alone with me for a while.
Well, what's wrong with that?
And still you haven't even kissed me yet.
Oh. I'm sorry, no. Diane.
No, please, Frank, not now.
Well, Diane, what's the matter?
I try not to believe it, Frank. I try not to listen to Uncle George. The rest of
it. Oh, what are they saying now?
The same thing. That you married me for my money. But that now that Uncle George has made it impossible for you to get a hold of it, you'll leave me.
Well, then what am I doing here, right now?
That's what I don't know, Frank.
Well, they don't waste any time, do they? They get right to you the minute I'm out of town. Diane, are you sure they don't know I'm here?
I told you once, Frank.
All right. Come here.
Oh, Frank.
That better?
This way every time. They tell me all those... make me listen to them and then...
Then what?
Oh, you kiss me like that and I forget all about them.
Good. Keep it that way now, huh?
I'll try, Frank. I promise.
Atta girl. It's very important to me, Diane, this day together. I want it all to be perfect.
It's going to be murder, Frank. The only way out of your marriage to Diane that will leave your other marriage in Los Angeles intact. Divorce is out of the question, naturally. Any notoriety, any publicity on the national press wires, and Millicent might get strange ideas about your business trips to New York. There'd be investigations, bigamy charges, two divorces instead of one, and, of course, the prospect of working for a living when you got out of prison. So it's murder now, a fairly simple kind of murder. The ingredients are all there. Diane, despondent, disillusioned in marriage, a nice, quiet suicide that will rate perhaps 2 inches of copy in the New York paper. No more.
You like the apartment, Frank?
It's wonderful. 3 rooms, fireplace, no nosy maids, a janitor.
Is it everything you wanted?
Everything. Even a back entrance. Now, you couldn't have done better, darling. We're all set.
Yes, Frank, all set with a murder planned for tonight. With your alibi still solid on that eastbound train due tomorrow morning at Penn Station. You were careful back in Chicago, weren't you? Arranging things so it would be almost impossible to check either the plane or train ticket. So no one will be able to say you left the train there and arrived in New York ahead of it. On the way to dinner with Diane, the plan begins to operate. You stop the cab at a drugstore, explain that you want to order a prescription sent up to the apartment, and go inside.
Yes, sir?
I'd like this filled.
25 tablets luminobarbitine.
Yeah, it's my wife.
Mm-hmm. Made out to Mrs. Frank Reynolds.
Isn't that right?
Yes, but I wish she'd come in herself to sign for it. We have to be careful filling prescriptions for sleeping medicine, particularly anything as potent as this.
I understand. Well, look, I'd rather not wait anyway. Why not send it up to her? Harding Arms Apartments. She'll be there to sign it for herself. What's the matter, Diane? Don't you like the restaurant?
Oh, yes, it's perfectly fine.
I don't know where we'd get a better dinner.
That's not just that. I'm sorry that it has to end.
Oh, you mean Uncle George, huh?
What? Yes, Uncle George. He'll be with us tomorrow.
Yeah, like William the Conqueror.
He'll probably know all about this.
How? You set the alarm, didn't you?
Yes, but...
Okay, I'll get up, breeze out to Newark. You can greet me with open arms when I step off the track at Penn Station.
You just don't know Uncle George. Look over there.
Huh? What do you mean?
That man who just came in by the hat check stand.
What about him?
I didn't tell you, Frank, but Uncle George has got his mind set on my divorcing you. He wants to prove to me.
So what?
That man over there is one of Uncle George's detectives.
How long has this been going on?
Since you were here before. Uncle's funny. He even has them follow me sometimes.
You? What for?
I don't know. Does it really matter, Frank?
It matters with me. Did he see us, Diane?
I don't think so. Not yet.
Let's get out of here.
Frank, it's no use. Let me finish my drink.
I said let's get out of here. I'll mix you a drink at home.
Frank?
Yeah?
Anyone see you come in?
Not a soul.
It seems silly, you using the back entrance, me coming in the front.
What took you so long?
This.
Oh, my prescription.
The desk clerk gave it to me. I had to sign for it. Is it right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's right. I'll fix you that drink I promised you.
Oh!
What's the matter?
It tastes awfully strong. Did you forget the soda?
Now, you're going soft on me, darling. Down the hatch.
Skull.
Skull.
There. This has been a funny evening. A funny visit.
There you go again. What's the matter?
Visit. That's an interesting word. Visit.
Look, darling,
My husband's visiting me for a few days. Nice to see you, dear. Nice to look across the room and find you there.
You're in a strange mood tonight.
No. Not strange, really. Just devoted. And maybe a little disappointed. Love does a lot of funny things, you know. Tops up your eyes and your ears. Keeps you believing in someone no matter what people tell you.
You're just tired, Diane.
Yes. I guess I am. Tired of secret meetings with my own husband.
Tired of lying to Uncle George, trying to defend you when I...
When you what?
There is another woman, isn't there, Frank? In Los Angeles?
Don't be silly.
It's like a movie. Sometimes, when I close my eyes and try to sleep, I see you getting off the train, meeting a smart-looking blonde in a red convertible.
You better get those ideas out of your head.
Do you mind if I stretch out a little?
Not at all.
I really don't think you're so terrible, darling. I just love you.
Sure.
Men think women don't know. They think they don't even suspect a little bit. But they do. They do, Frank. They do.
Yes, Frank. That sleeping medicine works fast. You watch the clock. 7:30, 8, 9, and then finally reach for her wrist and feel her pulse. There's nothing there now. Nothing. It takes a few minutes more to check the room, tidy it up, get rid of the cigarette butts that aren't stained with lipstick, wipe off fingerprints, scrape the druggist label off the bottle of sleeping pills, and then quietly, you let yourself out the door and hurry toward the back service stairs, and then...
Is that the floor?
Yes, sir. Mrs. Reynolds' apartment is 20B, around the corner near the rear stairway.
Are you sure she's here?
Yes, she came in an hour or so ago.
Alone?
Yes, sir, alone. Shall I wait?
Stand by a minute. I'll see if she'll talk to me for a while.
I'll wait.
It's the detective, Frank, coming from the elevator. You're trapped, with a choice of meeting him or running back down to the lobby. It's then that you feel the key in your hand.
The apartment. Yeah.
Mrs. Reynolds, your uncle wants me to talk to you. Mrs. Reynolds, are you all right?
Clerk, I know she's in there, sir.
Bring me the pass here, will you?
There's no time to think, Frank. You hold your breath, press back against the wall behind the door, and then...
She must be in there, sir. There's only one way out of the building at this time of night.
Yeah, open it up.
That's it.
Mrs. Reynolds!
You take the only chance you have, Frank. As they go in, you slide around the door in the darkness and then out into the hall.
Here, what's this? Get the light.
Mrs. Reynolds!
You aren't conscious of time now, Frank. Maybe it's an hour, maybe two, since that awful moment in the apartment. But things are beginning to settle down now as you sit in the dim railroad station in Newark, waiting for that train of yours to pull in. You settle back against the bench, vaguely aware of the smell of the oiled wood floors, and then the boards creak slightly as someone moves toward you in the darkness.
Got a light, buddy?
What? Oh. Oh, yeah. Here you are.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks very much. Oh, mind if I keep these?
Hmm? Oh, no, go ahead.
So... Dull hour, 3 a.m. Waiting for a train?
Yeah.
It's a funny thing, guy sitting in this drab station waiting for the train from Chicago at this hour.
Listen,
Yes, sir? Odd thing. You know, you could grab a taxi outside and get to New York in an hour. Still, you're waiting here.
Why? Look, you can figure that out for yourself.
Sit down, Mr. Reynolds.
How did you... My name...
It was printed on that match folder you handed me.
What do you want?
I want you to help me decide whether your wife's death was suicide or murder.
She's dead?
Yeah. After talking to her uncle, I decided to drop over here and see if you really were on the train.
Oh, well, listen, I can explain about that.
You can save all that for later. I'm Pearson, Mr. Reynolds, New York homicide. Why don't we skip the train, start back to New York right now? They're waiting for us back at... your apartment.
So now you're faced with it, Frank. Your big alibi, the keystone in your whole plan, is gone. Once or twice on the way back to the apartment, you almost decide to get it over with. To tell Pearson the whole truth and avoid the dread questioning you know is sure to come. But somehow you're not quite ready to give up. And when you finally walk into the apartment to face Diane's Uncle George, you get an idea of a way to bluff it through.
I tell you, this man's a murderer, Pearson.
Just a minute, Mr. Breckinridge. Just a moment. Let me handle it.
I told you. I can explain everything.
All right, you'll have a chance to, but let me start out, huh? Now, it seems you're on your way to New York on the train. You switched to a plane somewhere without telling anyone but your wife. Figure you can intercept the same train a day or so later, give yourself a solid alibi.
There's no use denying it, Frank.
Who's denying it?
What?
You mean you admit it?
Most of it. One word I don't like. Alibi.
Oh, it's true about the train. I set it up by telephone from Chicago.
You had a good reason, of course.
A very good reason.
What are you talking about?
You, Uncle George. You've never given us a minute's peace. Sticking your nose into our business, trying to poison Diane's mind against me. That's why I did it, Pearson. I wanted that day together. Just Diane and I, my wife, the two of us, by ourselves.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
I was forced into it, Lieutenant. Ask him about the private detective. Yeah. We go out for a quiet little dinner. At 7 o'clock last night, one of his bloodhounds follows us into the Shamrock Club.
We know all about that. So, what happened after you got home?
I told her. She either forgets Uncle George or I was through. She broke down. She got hysterical. Well, I walked out. I paced the streets for a while, and then I went over to Newark.
You didn't come back here?
No.
I see. Mr. Kittredge, will you step in here, please?
Kittredge?
Yes. A druggist, Mr. Reynolds. I want you to meet him.
Yes, Lieutenant.
Oh, this is Mr. Reynolds, Mr. Kittredge. Do you,
Yes, sir. That's the man who ordered the prescription.
Oh, of course. If you thought hard enough, Mr. Kittredge. You remember I told you that prescription was for my wife.
Then why did you order it?
Because she asked me to, on the way to dinner.
And she gave you a prescription made out by a doctor in Los Angeles?
Los Angeles? Why, I can't.
Yes. You don't know how a Los Angeles doctor could prescribe pills for your wife when she's never been there. Well, neither do I. There's something else, Mr. Reynolds. I've been in the homicide division for 8 years now. I guess I've investigated 100 suicides, and a lot of them women. You know something, Mr. Reynolds? I have yet to find one, particularly a woman, who didn't want to have the last word.
I don't know what you mean.
A suicide note. Your uncle's detective comes in here, finds the girl in the bed, a bottle of sleeping pills next to her. Now, does it seem logical she'd set up a thing like that without doing the one thing they all do?
I told you. She was despondent. She wasn't thinking straight when I left her.
That's what you say. I say she went to bed with every intention of getting up. All right, come on, Reynolds. You can get in touch with your lawyer on the way to headquarters.
Now, wait a minute. I didn't do anything. Lieutenant, you've got to believe
me.
Skip
it. I've got no time for that.
Just a minute, Lieutenant.
Huh?
I just can't take this on myself. What I feel personally and what is just are two different things, I guess. Diane was in Los Angeles a month ago.
What? You mean she was?
Well, that's interesting.
I should have told you before, I suppose, but...
Oh, think nothing of it. And I suppose you have the suicide note tucked up your sleeve?
Well, I do have one, as a matter of fact. An old one. You see, Diane did try to kill herself just last month. And that's why I've been having her followed.
Well, Reynolds, I guess I was wrong. Oh, well, we all make mistakes once in a while. I'm sorry.
The Whistler will return in just a moment with a strange ending to tonight's story.
So it's over now, Frank. A few more questions and you'll be released. Free of suspicion that you murdered Diane, wife number one. Free to go back to Los Angeles and someone they know nothing about, Millicent, wife number two. And it's ironic that Diane's Uncle George came through with the one statement that could save you. Yes, you were as surprised as Lieutenant Pearson to hear that Diane had actually gone to Los Angeles. And you realize now that she knew the truth about Millicent. That if you'd left her alone, she might have tried suicide a second time, successfully. You're going to be careful now, Frank. No missteps, no false moves, taking the cue from the lieutenant.
Yeah, this is a tough business I'm in, Reynolds. You gotta play hunches, you know.
Yeah.
I came into the room tonight and I took a look around. I see there isn't a note. Say to myself, This lady went to bed figuring she'd be up and going the next day. Intent, you know. Yeah, it's pretty important stuff.
I understand, Lieutenant.
Yeah. I was trained to look for intent above everything else. Well, sometimes you go wrong, though, just like now. Sometimes. Well, now.
What do you know about that?
Intent, you know. That's what they're going to ask me, Reynolds. What was in the little lady's mind?
The clock. I don't understand it.
I don't blame you. Now, why do you suppose she set that alarm clock? I'll tell you why. She expected it to wake her up. She expected to be alive right now. You know, I guess we'll just have to start the questions all over again. That clock's a little noisy for a nice, quiet suicide.
Let that whistle be your signal for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler, each Wednesday night at this same time. Brought to you by the Signal Oil Company, marketers of Signal gasoline and motor oil, and fine quality automotive accessories.
The Whistler, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 18th of February, 1948 on CBS. And if you thought it was a good pairing, regardless of the story of the leading lady, Lorette Philbrant, and star Gerald Moore, she would join him again on one of his main radio series the following year for four broadcasts of The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. And that wraps up this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.